would first like to just start off. I appreciate everyone submitting their questions. I can hardly keep track of them all this evening. And big thanks again to Coach Starkey. This has been tremendous. So I'll jump right in to some questions. One of the first ones came in from Isle Hart in the New York area, and she says, "Your team excels defensively because hard-nosed D is a daily discussion. I'm assuming daily discussion on hard-nosed defenses in your gym. Besides hand on the ball, do you have any other verbal cues or terminology that you found useful in your practices?"
Well, I think if you're going to be very good defensively, that communication has to be a big part of what you do. You know, I was always fascinated by the fact that Mike Krzyzewski has three phases of basketball: offense, defense, and communication. We have our kids constantly talking everything, from when they are guarding the ball, they say, "I've got the ball." Anybody in help has to call out that, "I've got your help." Screen defense is probably the biggest thing we do because we like to hedge, trap, and slide through, so we have to talk that. The hand on the ball thing, that's obviously somebody who studied our program a little bit, because that is the overriding principle of what we want to do. We want to create as many deflections as possible. We want our hands tracing the basketball at all times. We think that causes more interruptions than anything. So, that's a great question from somebody who knows a little bit about what we do.
Yes, she's a great serving coach of ours, who's definitely done her research, I'm sure, on your program. Second question I have is, this one comes from Edward Lenz. "How do you balance allowing the players to work the drill and stopping them to provide correction and teaching points versus interrupting the flow of the drill?"
That's an incredibly great question, Lindsay. I mean, it's really a great question. I think you'll find the majority of young coaches want to stop and talk all the time, and they think that's teaching. And I think there's a fine line. When we're working, say, in our pre-practice segment, we will stop and talk a little bit more than we normally would because that's more of a technique time. But when we get into a 5-on-5 or 4-on-4 or 4-on-5 segment, we want that segment to play through till the end. Whether, you know, sometimes we'll play, you know, 5-on-5 with 2 conversions or 5-on-5 with 1 conversion. We really like to convert at least one time. We're never going to do a scrimmage situation, just play half court, because we think conversion's a big part of the game. But what our staff does is we'll try and talk them through it while it's going on, but we will not stop. I think the most important thing you can teach a player to do is to think. And if you constantly stop and correct, they're not getting an opportunity to figure it out or to work through it. Now, when that scrimmage segment is over, if we feel like we need to give that particular player some extra time, we'll sub her out so we can continue playing and give her the instruction and sub her back in. Because I think sometimes too much talking can really slow practice and momentum down. But I really think that that's a very, very great question. And I think, again, young coaches want to talk a lot. I think experienced coaches want their players to try and figure it out.
That's tremendous. And is a way that, sort of in a follow-up question to that, is a way that you're able to get your players to think, do you use the questioning method? Or what has been your research or your go-to as far as getting your athletes to think, mid-drill, mid-play situations?
Well, I think there's a ton of things that go into it before you even get to the drill. One of the things that we utilize in our program, we utilize notebook. Our players bring the notebook to film. They bring their notebook to practice. Sometimes when we want to stop and take a water break, they pop their notebooks open and we talk to them about certain things. I think your ability to properly explain something before you go to a drill helps. We also like to go the part-whole method. So we might break down, before we go to 5-on-5 defense, you know, I may have the post on my end working on some 2-on-2 or 1-on-1 interior drills, and the perimeter be on the other end working on one segment of defense. So we try and break it down and teach those components before we pull it together as a whole. So I think there's probably about 5 or 6 things that go in to making them think. But the most important thing is kind of leaving them out to dry, you know, when you get in there, you know, and you talk to them all the time, especially on the offensive end, you know, when we're running motion, you know, and the possession may not be flowing. You know, one of the things that we're hollering out to them is figure it out, work it out. And I think that creates not only their ability to think, but it also creates avenues for them to communicate. When they have to start figuring things out for themselves, you'll see them start talking to each other, trying to help each other out.
That's
That's, I think, a great point, and really leads into our next question. This one comes from Steve DeLong, who's from Pennsylvania. And his first question is, any drills or methods to promote communication on defense? You know, you spoke to it a bit earlier, but if you could expand a little bit more on specifically, talk defense in that area.
Well, I think talking's a habit. Just as much as your stance and opening up to the ball and blocking out. So we start teaching communication defensively in our conditioning in the fall. Once to twice a week, we have specific conditioning just based on defense. Footwork, mirror drills and stuff like that. And all those drills, we have communication going. In our strength room, our weight coach, Melissa Moore, when she's doing footwork and agility stuff, there's communication involved in that. So I think you're going to struggle if you wait till you get 5-on-5 and then you tell the team, these are your verbal calls, this is what you want to talk about. Probably one of the best things that we do a drill called 5-on-5 or 4-on-4 change. We got it from Bob Knight in Indiana. We'll be playing on one end of the floor, 4-on-4, 5-on-5. I'll yell change, and the offense has to put the ball down. The defense picks it up, and we have to convert to the other end. Now, the key is you're not allowed to guard the man that was guarding you. So that creates a need for people to talk. Especially the defensive part. You know, the offense is coming at you. You can't guard the person who's guarding you. You got to make sure that two people's not guarding the same player. Somebody's got to pick up the ball, and that really creates an intense, quick time where you better talk or you're going to give up a bucket. And I think any time you do things like that, you know, there's got to be consequences. You know, we'll play 4-on-4, 5-on-5 change, and we may play it for 5 minutes and keep scoring. Then the loser's got to run down and back. You know, there's got to be a consequence involved, I think, for them to really concentrate on the things that need to be done for them to be successful, if that makes sense.
No, I think you've illustrated that perfectly. Another question that Steve had, and I'm sure many of our I've actually received this question a couple times already this evening, and it was, what are some suggestions for reading material? And before I let you jump into that, I just want to make sure all of our audience is aware of the blog that I know that we all in the coaching community find extremely helpful and effective. So I would say, I guess I'll answer the initial one, and that would be, you know, encouraging all of our participants to log on to your blog, check it. I know you post on it, it seems to be a couple times a day, and you provide great insight to motivation coaching. Any other immediate thoughts beyond that blog that you produce as far as great coaching reading material?
I tell you, I just recently got through reading it, and I don't say this lightly. It's a book called The Mental Game by H.A. Dorfman. It is the best coaching book I have ever read in my life, and I'm a pretty avid reader. I was actually sitting in my office one day, and Coach Don Meyer called from Greg Brown's office. Greg's an assistant coach at Central Florida, and they called to tell me about the book, and I went and got it, and it just blew me away. You know, you're not going to find it. It's out of print. You'd have to go to half.com, which is run by eBay. That's a great place, by the way, for coaches to buy books. You can buy a new book there for a couple dollars. Just go to half.com. But I'm a big John Maxwell reader. He doesn't necessarily talk about how to screen or how to cut or how to defend, but he does a great job of how to communicate and how to motivate and how to build teams and how to inspire and all those things. And John Maxwell's really, really huge with me. But there's so much stuff out there now than when I started. The great blogs. You know, I'm not saying this just because I'm talking to you guys, but Point Guard College has put some great stuff out there. If I was a young coach, I'd be all over that. There's a lot of free stuff out there now with blogs and Twitter and social media.
Awesome. And do you mind repeating the author's name one more time on that book you said you just got done reading?
H.A. Dorfman.
H.A. Dorfman.
Yeah.
And it's called Coaching the Mental Game, correct?
It's just, yes, Coaching the Mental Game. This guy actually worked in minor league and major league baseball. But there's so much in there in terms of teaching. It's incredible. It is absolutely the best book I've ever read.
Oh, awesome. Awesome. Well, I hope some of our participants are able to check that book out. And we appreciate you sharing the half.com resource as well. Another question, and this one I received from Ryan Josephson as well as Sean Stallworth, is how, you know, some of them have related, you know, they're young coaches or they don't have much of a coaching resume beyond maybe a JV team or a freshman team, or they're just simply interested in working camps over the summer. What is your suggestion for especially young coaches, maybe with not as much a basketball background or immediate connections? What's the best way to start or try and get into, you know, working summer camps?
Well, one of the easiest ways to do it here is just pick up the phone and give us a shout. It's not a real difficult process. You know, we have coaches email us all the time or call us or they'll stop by. And, you know, we're always looking for people to work camp, and I think that's true of a lot of camps. It's really not a difficult process. That's how I got started, just calling and saying, do you need somebody to work camp?
Awesome. I know many will appreciate a simple yet, you know, very effective opportunity or suggestion. Next question is, this one comes from Nate Crawford. What should an assistant coach be tracking during a game to be most helpful during timeout?
Well, I think that is going to be incumbent upon what the head coach requests. And again, I've worked for a variety of head coaches, and usually they assign what they want tracked. It's not something that the assistant coach gets to choose. So I think what you do is you work with your head coach, and if you're not charting anything, maybe go meet with the head coach and say, you know, is there something I could chart that will help you? Because certainly there's a lot of things that can be charted, but a lot of it's going to depend on, you know, the coaching philosophy, the system of play. I know when Rick Pitino was at Kentucky, he had an assistant coach that I knew who tracked turnovers and baskets that the opponent scored against Kentucky's press. And I thought that was fascinating. What they explained was it seems like every time a team would score against their press, it would just seem like, you know, that bucket would be worth 10 points, you know, because obviously there'd be a breakdown. But they would go in at halftime and see an opponent had scored two buckets against the press, but they had turned them over five times. So that stat was obviously important to let Pitino know, even though it looked like a couple big buckets, over the long 20-minute haul right there that our press had worked. But I think you got to go check with your head coach to see what would best help him or her depending on their philosophy.
Awesome. Well, and we have one more question here, and the question is, I've often heard the best assistant coaches are opposite the mood of the head coach. What are your thoughts on this, the good cop, bad cop mentality from a staffing perspective?
Well, I think there's some truth to that, but I do think the majority of the time the assistant coach needs to be the good cop as much as possible. You've got to be positive and upbeat and full of energy. You know, Coach Brown used to refer to it as a buffer. You know, after he goes and rips a kid, he'd always want us to go right behind and pat that kid on the back and say, hey, you know, coach is just getting on you because he believes in you, or give him something positive and something, you know. I just think the majority of the time, the bad cop needs to be the head coach. Now again, that may vary from program to program. But I think a good thing regardless, even if you're an assistant coach and the opportunity comes where you have to be tough on the kid, is to turn around and make sure you find something good to finish that out. I just don't think it's the assistant coach's responsibility to rip into players the majority of the time. I think that's the head coach's job. I think we're there to teach and to support the head coach. Coach Meyer used to talk about catching them doing something right. And I think that's a really good thing for an assistant coach to do, because a head coach may often have to get on a player to get them to a certain place. But I think if you can catch them doing something right and give them some encouragement and some inspiration from that, that you can really get them going. So I hope that's a good answer. It's going to vary from program to program, but the assistant coach really needs to be positive and upbeat as much as possible, I think.
Right. No, I think you definitely answered that, and I appreciate that. And I just want to thank all our participants for submitting their questions. I encourage everyone in future calls to definitely email the questions in advance early, and we'll have more calls to come. So I'll turn it back to Sefu. Thanks, Coach.
You're welcome, Lindsay.
Thanks, Lindsay. Really appreciate it. I know there are a lot more questions there, Coach, than what we could answer. But again, by all means, everybody, encourage you to drop us an email early, and we'll be sure to try and get to as many questions as possible well in advance. Coach, I've got two questions for you to wrap up.
Okay.
When we spoke earlier in the week, I was asking you, it wouldn't so much be a loaded question, but it was a question that I knew I was going to come back to you with, and here they are. First question is, if you could start back over, what would you do differently or better?
Well, I think this. I would want to recognize the value of people and relationships quicker. I think young coaches get into coaching because they love basketball and the X's and O's really excite them, but the really good teachers out there understand the value of relationships and those kind of things. I wish I could have evolved with that a little bit quicker. I think it's very important, and I wish I would have done this a little bit earlier. I wish I would have created a circle of influence, some mentors. I've got an incredible circle right now of people that I go to. I wish I'd have had it a little bit earlier. So those are two things right now. If I had to do all over again, I'd do.
And my last question for you is your own question again. And it's one that that I know a lot of us on the call struggle with, given all that goes into being a good coach, but also managing all the other things and other hats that we wear. How do you find and how do you handle finding balance in your life?
Well, I think that's one of the key questions. And I would say this, I've probably failed at doing that. I'm one of those guys who spends nights in the offices. You know, for instance, I won't go home tonight. We just got back off our charter air flight for Arkansas, and I'll break the tape down, and then I'll go ahead and get started on South Carolina. You know, I've probably gone 4 or 5 years in a row without a vacation. And that, I don't think, you know, I'm not saying that to brag. That's not a good thing. I think a big thing is to try and schedule your breaks. You know, one of the things Coach Meyer talks about is scheduling short periods of time to get away. He thinks long vacations are difficult on coaches, especially on the college level, because so many things can back up on you. But he referred to them as mini vacations, taking three or four days here and three or four days there. And I've gotten a lot better at that. I think it's important to find some things away from the game that you enjoy. I enjoy reading. You know, I enjoy a little bit of jazz music. I think you've got to find some things that will take you away from the game sometime. It's hard. I'm preaching to the choir here, I know, but we're sitting here, you watch I'm in my room last night and, you're watching a college game and you're trying to figure out what the defense is trying to do and, you're looking for a tendency on the offense. I mean, it's hard to watch and enjoy a game of basketball anymore because that's what you're programmed to do. I do think it should be a goal to find balance. I just think I'm not a very good guy to ask how to do that because I'm not sure I've been very successful at doing that. But I would certainly challenge everybody to try. If not, you can get burnt out in this game. I mean, it's a high stress level. That's the one thing that's changed now from, the last 30 years. We're in an instant gratification syndrome here. People want to win and win right now. You know, I was listening to, I think it was a PBS special that they did with Krzyzewski, and he was talking about, I think his first three seasons at Duke were losing seasons. You know, if he was hired today and had two losing seasons, he wouldn't see his third one at Duke. So people want you to reach a certain level of excellence right now, and then they want you to stay there. So that kind of makes it difficult for you to find balance, but it also probably makes it more important that you do so, because if you're not careful, it can gobble you up. So I certainly challenge everybody to look for things. If you're married, if you're family, certainly you've got to find time for those guys. I'm married. The thing that I'm fortunate about is I've got a wife that loves the game almost as much as I do. So if I go home, she might have a game on TV, and I've just got through watching about 9 games. I got to go to the office at the house to read a little bit. But she loves the game, and she loves the kids, and she's kind of part of the program, so she understands when I'm spending hours at the office, so I'm pretty lucky there.
Well, I'm sure there are a lot who can identify with having a supporting cast, whether it be a significant other or young ones who help make their daily lives as coaches that much better and that much more enjoyable.
Absolutely.
Coach, I want to say thank you so much for all your time, all the contributions. The one thing I've come to learn in having the opportunity to follow along your blog and your Twitter post is you are the ultimate maven. You embody all that I think each of us should as coaches, and that be sharers of information. And I want to thank you again for being with us tonight. For those of you who are interested in learning more and getting more from Coach Starkey, definitely I'd encourage you to follow along his blog, hoopthoughts.blogspot.com. You can also track him on Twitter. His Twitter handle is @LSUCoachStarkey. Beyond that, again, in the same vein, Coach so unselfishly shared a lot of information with us at PGC. Just earlier, at the end of last week, he sent a number of different presentations that he uses with his teams and on his classes that he teaches as well. And we're going to post those for everybody in a blog later this week. There's a couple in there on practice structure, the 10 Commandments of Practice, more on the art of being an assistant coach, and another great document that I just read over, practices versus game stats, which I think will help address some of the questions that many of you had. So again, we'll be posting these along with audio from this call and audio from our last call with Rick Torbett of Better Basketball on our blog, on our website at pgcbasketball.com later this week. We'll send an email to let you know once it's up, but did want to share that with you. So again, Coach Starkey, thank you so much.
Well, thank you guys. This is an incredible concept. It really is. You guys do so much, not just for players, but for coaches, and I felt really blessed to be a part of it tonight.